This episode is brought to you by Infosys Public Services, a leader in next-generation digital solutions and consulting for the DMV. Learn more at infosyspublicservices.com/DMV. Welcome to AnvaCast, bringing news, information, and expertise to the Anva community. Here's your host, Ian Grossman. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the AnvaCast. This week, I am pleased to welcome to the AnvaCast episode, Steve Sebastian. Steve is Anva's guy in charge of our fraud detection and remediation program. Steve, welcome to the AnvaCast.
Thank you, Ian. It's great to be here with you.
For those that are listening and aren't familiar with those words, fraud detection and remediation, may more commonly know the program as FDR. It's fundamentally rooted in a training program, but is such a larger portfolio. And one of the reasons we've asked Steve to join us today is here we are in early January, and every year the FDR program releases updates, particularly to the training modules. And so we thought it was a good opportunity to revisit the topic and talk about what's new in the FDR program. But Steve, before we get into what's new, for those that aren't as familiar with the program, can you maybe walk us through a very high-level summary of what that program is all about, particularly focused on the very robust training curriculum that we have in our fraud detection and remediation program?
Sure. Although FDR was originally developed to focus on the authentication of identity documents, mainly for driver's license staff, as you mentioned, FDR has expanded significantly to include fraud tools for every level of staff, from support employees all the way up to administrators. And unfortunately, as our community has come to know, fraud is not limited to driver's licenses. Every operating unit in every organization is vulnerable to different types of fraud in different scenarios. So in response, FDR has really become AMVA's comprehensive fraud training, and I guess I'd call it a resource package, applicable again to all staff and all business units. And I guess to get a good idea from a high level, if we look at three overlapping functionalities, I think it provides a good view of what FDR really is. And first, as mentioned, it's a suite of computer-based or e-learning courses and modules covering various document issuance and fraud-related topics that can be delivered directly to students via computer. FDR includes suggestions for assigning these modules to various business units, but the jurisdictions have the flexibility to determine which modules are best suited for any student's group's job duties. And certainly there are modules specifically focused on types of identity documents, such as birth certificates or immigration documents, which are absolutely crucial for licensed staff. But there are many other modules ranging from internal fraud to, say, mechanics lien fraud or even fraud for managers that offer key training to that whole host of topics. So there's one component. Secondly, it's a really comprehensive electronic curriculum that can be used by jurisdictions to develop their own training programs. And those programs can be delivered electronically, perhaps installed on a learning management system, taught in a classroom with an instructor, or perhaps a hybrid approach. And there are lots of hands-on activities and implementation guidelines included with FDR. But going to the largest picture, FDR is really a one-stop repository for all of AMVA's fraud-fighting efforts, whether it be best practices or contact lists, resource guides, or a plethora of tools. They can be accessed from one single point. And if we remember that the definition of fraud is deception for personal gain, it's easy to see that agencies are vulnerable in countless ways. And access to those tools in an easy-to-get manner is
right,
is critical.
So it's not only robust in terms of the volume of content and the depth of the content, but it sounds like the flexibility you mentioned, where different members can go in and sort of pick and choose from the menu to figure out what's right for them, can also be overwhelming to figure out, how do I put these pieces together for what's right for my agency or my team. So what are some of the common approaches you've seen in terms of how a member jurisdiction is deploying the content that's in the FDR program?
Sure. I think it's a really great point to talk about just how robust the program has become in response to what our jurisdiction members have required and demanded. I don't think there are two identical training scenarios in any two different agencies. So it's really important that FDR maintain and keep all of those tools ready. But as you mentioned, it can quickly become overwhelming. And so FDR has a multitude of guides within it, including implementation guidance, suggested curricula for different job duties. And as a trainer or a manager in a jurisdiction goes through the implementation guide and the tools, they can quickly see how using that implementation guide might lead to some very, very interesting implementations. Our most successful jurisdictions have reported using some sort of hybrid approach. They'll go through the implementation guide, take some suggestions, take some classroom activities, and install FDR on, say, a learning management system or other electronic means, and allow students to get through that computer-based training at their own pace. Mm-hmm. There are tests within the training so that administrators can reach a comfort level that the students are progressing and actually learning skills. And then the jurisdiction can use the suggested classroom activities and hands-on training modules to create activities that they can then bring those students in face-to-face if they choose. And they'll be dealing now with a student that has an elevated knowledge level of fraud, fraud documents, and fraud techniques that they wouldn't have had in an entirely classroom-driven approach. And that's been very, very successful for many jurisdictions.
I think what's interesting about the job classification piece and tying it to the curriculum is it's a good reminder that training in fraud and how to fight fraud is not limited to those that see themselves in a fraud unit, which sometimes I think becomes a misnomer. So give us some examples when you look at that job classification, that kind of how it's broken up, that illustrates how this is much more comprehensive than maybe just your investigative team.
Oh, absolutely. There are units within FDR that are applicable to, as I mentioned before, all staff from an entry level staff person that is entirely in a support function, like let's say in the mailroom. There we have material in FDR that is absolutely critical to them, as it is all the way up to the administrator. As a matter of fact, for administrators, we have a particular module called the Administrators 15. And the 15 is an acronym for Fighting Fraud Through Education, Engineering, and Networking. And that Administrators module covers each of those three topics extensively and provides the tools. For that mailroom employee that we mentioned, there is a module that we created in conjunction with some DHS initiatives and ICE initiatives that really do a great job in outlining how, let's say, a mailroom employee can prevent fraud and may even be the target of fraud by outside entities. So although that mailroom employee doesn't look at licenses or perform transactional responsibilities, they may very well be at the front door of some fraudulent activity. And having them well trained in recognizing those signs is absolutely beneficial in today's day and age. Because as you know, we've seen the fraud community be very nimble and resilient. You know, from the times when license plates were made out of leather, and licenses were simply laminated pieces of paper, we've come a long way. And the infiltration of fraud just affects every level of employee. That's why it's just as critical to have training for every level of employee as well.
You know, your mention of the federal agencies makes me think about how the curriculum is created. When you talk about the way that those that are trying to commit fraud are becoming more and more sophisticated, it requires a more sophisticated, collaborative approach to create the curriculum to fight the fraud. So maybe talk a little bit about how we come up with the curriculum in these modules and the partners that you work with to contribute to those pieces of material.
Sure. As much as I'd love to claim individual responsibility, I cannot. And it's really indicative of a great approach that is taken in so many avenues with AMBA initiatives. But we maintain constant communication and remain immersed within the fraud community. And that fraud community consists of document issuers, many of them, all of them members, federal partners, law enforcement, even sister agencies, some dedicated entirely to fraud and others dealing with it as sort of a tangential topic. But we maintain communication with them and stay in sync with document releases and even anecdotal experience from document issuers and our partners throughout the community. A couple of really important pieces that we participate in our AMVA's monthly fraud calls, which I cannot sing enough praise about. They are fantastic and really get us that ground level knowledge of what's happening in those branches in our member agencies. But those calls are also attended by federal partners and give us great insight as to perhaps new releases that are coming on, or again, fraud trends that they're seeing, whether it be with their own documents or documents from outside. And there is another way that members themselves can get involved in the content of FDR. On the AMVA website, we have a utility within the FDR section that allows members to put forth suggestions of edits, new content, changed content in our curriculum, and they can actually track their suggestions from research all the way to approval. And approval is the important thing, because when we get all of this information for our updates, whether it be a new issue or an edit, all of those are funneled back through the issuer or through the suggester of the edit to make sure that all of the edits finally performed and that will appear in the next update are completely approved by the originating entity.
Well, let's talk about those updates. That's one of the hallmarks of this program, has always been a series of annual updates that come out every January. What's new this year that just came out this week?
Well, you know, 2020 has been a very busy year for FDR. One of the major components that had taken up a great deal of time during the year is fairly boring to discuss, and I'll keep it brief, but it's really...
There's nothing more we want on a podcast than something that's boring to discuss. So, I mean, great.
That's right. Well, here we'll dive right in. The technical side of the courseware. FDR, like the majority of e-learning courses and tools out there, contained Adobe Flash components. And that may light a light bulb for many people. and perhaps folks have heard that Flash is losing support globally. Actually, the deadline was 12/31 of 2020, and I think there may be a few installations that may still be able to run it, but in general, it's dead. And so 2020 took a significant effort to make sure that FDR had removed all of those Flash components and is now entirely HTML5 driven. So techno babble aside, the main point is that FDR remains universally compatible on all browsers and on all devices. So that's the big piece for what happened in 2020. But that's not to say that we didn't have curriculum and content update as well. One of the pieces that we're anxious to get feedback on now that it's been released is a new resource. It's a consolidated jurisdiction driver license guide that includes all of the releases from our member jurisdictions that accompany new license issues. So when the press department releases any guidance to AMVA, to their business partners within their own local jurisdiction, we've consolidated all of those releases and placed them within FDR. So they're all in one place, very similar to those ID checking guides that are available universally. This is a collection of all our members' driver license press releases. So I'm really looking forward to getting some feedback once that has gained some traction with this released last week. We also have some new modules and new content. We've got a new abandoned vehicle and mechanics lien fraud best practices module. That, along with a facial recognition best practices module, are the result of the great work done by just two of AMVA's many working groups. Mm-hmm. And those best practices have been translated into modules. We've also seen actually new releases even during this year of COVID. U.S. travel document saw a new release, so that was included, along with the Canadian IMM 1442 and the Canadian temporary visa. Those items have been updated and also did appear in this last update. So we're glad to get that new and updated information out to the jurisdictions. And of course, all of the updated resources that folks have come to expect in FDR, the indexed and searchable job aids, contact lists, and resource guides, standards documents, et cetera, all have been updated with any releases that came out during 2020.
Steve, tell me a little bit about the best practices piece. I know these two updates you mentioned is not the first time where we've taken a best practice and turned it into a training module. Of course, so much of what AMVA's working groups do is about producing these shared best practices. So can you illustrate for our listeners the difference that a student might get from an experience with the best practice module and how that differs from, say, just downloading and reading the best practice document?
Yeah, I think probably the most drastic difference in the document between the document and a module. The module takes all of those salient points from the document itself, although it doesn't simply regurgitate, is the only word I can think of. It doesn't simply regurgitate the best practice document, but it puts it into perspective with the other FDR tools that might be available and talk about the tangential relationships between one particular best practice document and items that have tied together, whether that be through FDR independent modules, other FDR best practices modules. It brings them all together in a way that simply reading the standalone document doesn't really provide. So it gives it a broader context and broader, let's call them implementation resources, because the reader, the module participant can begin to pull those different components from the different training pieces without having to go through and find them within individual documents.
Got it. Super helpful. So a lot of our conversation has been through the lens of a member jurisdiction, the DMV and the enforcement agencies accessing the FDR program. But it's not only our member jurisdiction agencies that end up being users of some of this content. Who are those non-member users by type? I'm not asking for, you know, names of folks, but
sure.
What are those entities that we are talking to that are using this curriculum?
Well, you know, we're very, very fortunate to have participation in the creation and maintenance of FDR from a variety of sources. First off, oversight by the Law Enforcement Committee is extremely beneficial, and participation by a number of our federal partners who also happen to issue documents is absolutely critical to the creation. But those agencies are also some of our biggest users. For instance, the Department of Defense in a number of their units use FDR. Many ICE units in the field use FDR. We've had a great arrangement with some of our sister agencies, that being NAFSIS, and most recently, the Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance, all using FDR. Aside from that, there is also sort of a paid component that commercial users outside of our membership can avail themselves to. And I think the most recognizable group that takes advantage of that is the group of IRS ITIN certified acceptance agents who are private third-party agents who are quote-unquote licensed by the IRS to process individual taxpayer identification numbers. And the IRS requires that applicants for that license take FDR. And in the past 5 years, we've had over 16,000 IRS ITIN agents take that course. Of course, that is a select pieces of our training. All level one, FDR level one public type information that's been available and consolidated. It's not exactly the same material that our jurisdictions use. Some of that material isn't appropriate, so therefore it's kept out. But we've got a great, great commercial use of FDR that's just continued to grow.
Interesting. And that's mostly focused on training them on, you know, the how to note and detect maybe like a fake driver's license when someone is going through the tax process. Is that kind of the context of that training?
That's exactly it. It's introducing the real basics of document authentication. When they're presented, whether it be passports, driver's licenses, work authorization permits, things of that nature. The IRS wants to make sure that they know how to look at a document clearly. So when I talked about select content, we've already noted that FDR has a huge breadth. Our commercial users focus in on very select publicly available information limited to document authentication and not so much fraud in general.
So I know 2021 has barely started, and while no one is sad to see 2020 leave us, and I know it's but the start of the year, any thoughts about what FDR is going to tackle in 2021 and what might be, if we were to be back here a year from now, any sense of what we might be talking about in terms of yet another round of updates?
Yeah, I think this year is going to see some interesting things just on some conventional items, you know, rolling back to really document-driven thing. I know that we've been anticipating a new U.S. passport for some time, and there are indications that 2021 will finally see that. And that really should be a major event within the identification world. So we're looking forward to that. But I think we've also got some other items related actually to COVID and the pandemic that may very well work their way into FDR. And we're going to be interested to see what our partners are experiencing in this, because right now it's kind of unknown what documentation may be required of the vaccination program. Will there be electronic records to follow someone? Will there be additions, notations on certain documents, that types of thing? So we're following that really quite closely. I mean, unfortunately, you know, we talked about those fraudsters and their resilience. You don't have to look too hard to see news reports of opportunities in that vaccination area already being exploited. So we're remaining vigilant in our views on that. And hopefully we don't have to talk about that in January 2022, because it will all have gone smoothly. But we've got to keep our finger on that pulse, because those are prime opportunities for fraud doors opening.
Absolutely. That's fascinating. Who would have thought that's where the FDR program would evolve to, you know, talk about the falsification or counterfeiting of a vaccination certificate.
Absolutely. But
that's certainly in the core of where the world is today. Interesting. Well, Steve, I appreciate you taking some time today to chat with us and for our folks to hear all about the program. One thing I wanted to point out for those that don't know, Steve mentioned that, you know, the commercial use, there's a charge for it. But of course, our member jurisdictions, there's no extra charges for somebody logging on and using the FDR curriculum. It's all part of paying your member dues, if you will. Steve, is it as easy as simply going on to the AMVA website and downloading stuff?
Yeah, I'm really glad you mentioned that. FDR, for our members, jump onto the AMVA website, follow the quick link on the left-hand side, and download the entire package. The treasure box is then laid at your feet. That toolbox will contain everything you need and all the implementation material. The paid version, as we mentioned, yes, that is taken online for commercial entities. Our jurisdiction members are not barred from taking that, but would certainly ask that any members that might be interested in using that commercially available resource for any reason, give us a quick contact. Perhaps we can help answer some questions. And what I also might mention for our jurisdiction members, along with that commercial arm of FDR, while I was an administrator back in Massachusetts earlier in my career, we were fielding a lot of calls from our private sector partners looking for guidance on fraud training. Can you come teach us how to look at licenses, or come teach us how to do this or that in a fraud preventative measure? And resources were always at a premium, so that was never possible. So I just mentioned to our jurisdiction members that if they are getting these types of requests that they cannot fulfill for fraud training, you might want to point your partners over to the AMVA site, where they can then access the paid version of FDR and perhaps get the training that they need and not strain those jurisdiction member resources.
Excellent. And anybody of any type who wants more information can reach you by going through the website and contact you through that portal.
Absolutely. We'd love to help more and more people keep themselves from being victims of fraud.
Excellent. Well, thanks again, Steve. Appreciate you taking the time chatting to us about the program and the latest developments. Perhaps this will be an annual visit where we'll catch up in a year from now and find out what's new. And it'll be really interesting to check back in and see where that vaccination story has gone a year from now.
Absolutely.
For the rest of you, thank you again for listening to the very first 2021 episode of the AmvaCast, and we'll look forward to seeing you back here in another week. Stay well, everyone.
Thank you for joining us for AmvaCast, hosted by Ian Grossman, produced by Claire Jeffrey, music by Gibson Arthur. This episode was brought to you by Infosys Public Services. Visit us at amvacast.podbean.com and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify.